You're listening to the Higher Ideas Podcast, where ideas grow. Connect on higherideas.net. Now here's your host, I.
Hello, fellow human, and welcome back to the Higher Ideas Podcast. Today's episode will be a bit of an update on my personal journey with ayahuasca and the ayahuasca apprenticeship that I've been undergoing here for a little over 3 years at this point here in Peru. I used to give you guys a very blow-by-blow sort of view of every single ayahuasca dieta I was going through on this process. But I've stopped doing that lately because I crossed a certain line in my experiences where I realized it was becoming very personal to me. I was starting to work with elements of this ayahuasca shamanism I'm studying that I'm not sure are helpful to share, and even some things that might be harmful to share, that I've become more or less quiet about my own individual ayahuasca experiences. Let's give you an overall view of how things are going with the apprenticeship. They're going fine, really. I've gotten to a point now where drinking a cup of ayahuasca, even if it's full to the brim, does not shake me at all. I don't get scared. I'm not worried about, oh boy, this is going to be a hell of a ride. I take my cup, I swig it back. Que sera, sera, right? Let's see what happens today. And that's definitely progress from where I was in the past, where I was always a little anxious about, can I handle this today? Ooh, what's going to happen? I've gotten to a place that's very comfortable with the medicine, which is a good thing for an apprentice, of course. And beyond that, I've gotten really good at just surrendering to the effect, to sitting quietly and waiting for it to come. And the sort of anxiety that comes when the effect starts to really kick in, you know, the heart still kind of wants to race. There's a little bit of anxiety that wants to get me there. But, you know, I move through it easily now. I sort of see it just as a physical reaction of here comes the effect, right? And when the effect does come, I used to get really tangled up in little knots here and there, fighting the effect or overanalyzing what's happening, which would pull me out of the effect. I've become pretty good at just sitting and riding out the effect and having my experience. Same goes with the purge. I don't struggle with the purge anymore. It's actually become such a nice relationship now in my drinks where I'll just know. Right? Do a whole bunch of work, and then I start to feel, ooh, I think the purge is coming. Let's sit with it for a while. Let's see, is it coming out? Is it staying in? There it is. Get in position. Fwah! Out it comes. No struggle. These are all good things for an ayahuasca drinker, and it took me a while to get there. So in that sense, things are going great. And of course, the story of what it is that I'm developing here, I guess my own medicine is what's developing my relationship with certain images and spirits and energies, identifying what my strengths are, what forces are there at my disposal to call in for a ceremony. This is what a shaman does in ceremony. It has relationship and developed, you know, a whole story with this and that force and figure and spirit. While in ceremony, you call them in as they're needed, right? There's a dark moment where you feel there needs an energy of protection, I've got just the thing. I've got a relationship with this spirit of light and protection. Let's sing a song or whatever technique is used for that particular energy. Let's call this thing in, and in it comes. And it really has been fascinating to see how really there is something to this. But now it's at the point where I can do it myself. And that's been fun. To see not only the effect that these energies could have on me, but seeing this same effect happening for others with me in a room, so that I know it's not just my imagination. They don't know what spirit I'm calling. They don't know what energy I'm calling, but they receive an effect, and their feedback really teaches me. I very recently, in this last couple months, finally was allowed to cook ayahuasca twice at the camp. We cooked up two big batches. I beat the ayahuasca to a pulp, prepared it all up from A to Z. I was involved in the process and got to see how it's done. And I could have looked this up online all this time, but I was waiting for the proper way for Maestro to show me. And this is what he's done very recently. So things are going well. Things are going fine. Actually, overall, this journey, this last 3 years, has been rough as hell on me. A lot of impacts, a lot of failures, a lot of pain, but very little of it was around the apprenticeship itself. Every time I'd go and continue the apprenticeship with another dieta, another session with the medicine, that always has progressed very smoothly, very strongly. It's more on the element of personal life, back in town, you know, finances and relationship and betrayals by people here, things like that. That's what's really roughed me up. And of course, health issues, especially in the first years I was here, constantly getting sick from eating something dirty or just getting the flu, every single flu that would come through town, you know. So I was getting beat up quite a bit here in the everyday life side of things. But when it comes to the apprenticeship, there's never been any sense of wasted time, any sense of things not going right. It has been up, 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 up every time. So that's where it sits right now. But what I'm going to share today is a little difficult to word properly, I think, because I have to be delicate here. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the real human relationship I'm having with Maestro. And it's difficult because I really respect Maestro and I really am grateful to him for this entire opportunity, right? He has been central to everything happening here. None of it would have happened without his approval and his cooperation and his allowing me space to be here and do this. Even on the side of legalities, my residency, it's through his business. I'm an employee. And that was, again, thanks to his, you know, agreeing and everything. But there is a reality that I want to sort of highlight a bit here for anyone who's going to work with shamans or maybe attack an apprenticeship like myself. Shamans get glorified by people who just see them a little bit, right? For a client who comes to a center like ours, you only get to see the shaman for a little while, and they're usually pretty removed, so you don't really get a good sense of who they really are. You sort of get glimpses of them, and they're always presenting their best possible self because they're supporting you through medicine work, right? And they have to be an inspiring figure. So on one level, it's sort of important that they have this image of sort of the captain of the ship, right? The infallible leader in this medicinal process. And I will say that in the work of the medicine and dedication and cleanness, doing things right with the medicine, Maestro is on that pedestal still for me. But as I described, that is a different person than everyday person, right? We're all humans at the end of the day. We all have egos. We all have insecurities. We're all still working on healing failings that we have, even someone like Maestro. And in large part, I've seen that our relationship through this apprenticeship, I've seen all of the places where I've forced him to work on certain things about himself that he hasn't been forced to work on. So, you know, he's told me this before. You're teaching me, I'm teaching you. The people that come through camp, they teach you, they teach me. I learn from watching you teach them and watching them teach you. We're all teaching each other all the time, and we're all challenging each other to grow in this way. Because someone in a vacuum by themselves don't need to really challenge some things about themselves. There are some issues people have that are only exposed when they relate with others. And I guess I should specify here, Maestro has never had an apprentice as far as I know. I am his first. And even getting to the point of becoming his apprentice was a sort of struggle. There was a lot of resistance in him against it. And for a long time, I wondered what that was. You know, is it that he doesn't want to teach anyone else and just wants to keep everything for himself and just die with his knowledge and his knowledge will end there? I always thought that would be weird because, you know, what a waste, right? To go through a whole lifetime, especially that he inherited his knowledge from his grandfather. And then to have all this knowledge, to be this wealth of knowledge about the medicine, and then just to hold it in and just die with it, that seems like such a shame, such a terminal end, such a tragedy, right? So when I was wondering why the resistance, you know, at first that came through my mind. Maybe it's he doesn't want to share. But as I started knowing him when the apprenticeship was happening, that changed to maybe he just doesn't know how to teach. And that's why he was really pushing me away for a long time. Maybe it's that he has no idea how to go about properly transferring this to someone else, so he's just shooing it away, right? No, don't bother me, right? But I challenged him to try by being here. By him accepting me coming and doing this, I guess he took that challenge on and has been working on it in the 3 years I've been here. And definitely the relationship has always been hitting bumps along the way. We get over the bumps, I express honestly what I'm feeling and what I need and what he's not doing, and he expresses the same of me, and we find our middle ground, and then we get over that hump and things get smooth again for a while. But then again we hit another hump, right? And we recently hit one of these humps. And it really was in my last dieta of last year with Karim. At the very beginning of that dieta, in the very first drink, I had been entering group ceremony shirtless for a little while by that time. And it was because I had this nice ceremony shirt and everything, but I found that I would remove it as soon as we turned the lights off, because I was sweating, I was hot, especially when you drink the ayahuasca, you know, I'd get sweaty. And so within 10 minutes of turning the lights off, I'd just take that thing off, and I started not doing it, because I figured, what's the point, right? But in this particular dieta with Karim, on the very first drink, I'm sitting there waiting for the ceremony to begin, Maestro comes in, and he looks at me and he says, where's your ceremony shirt? And I say, I don't wear it anymore, you know, it's been a while, I get hot. And then he said, sort of beratingly, he said, go get yourself a shirt, you're not just anybody, you're a master guide, he said to me. So of course, yeah, I'm sorry, right? Ooh, I didn't realize. I went and I got some t-shirt I had, I come back with it. And, you know, kind of took the lesson from that. But during that dieta, I got to thinking, because for the last while, I had been noticing that in front of our clients, he was only calling me a translator. And it was kind of starting to bother me, you know, why don't you ever call me your apprentice? Why don't you ever call me an assistant? And so during that dieta, I had thought about all this, and I took a moment to speak to him about this when he came to visit me in my little shelter. You know, I said, Maestro, can I make, please, a little request? I noticed that you only call me a translator, and that's really starting to make me feel like you don't appreciate all of the levels I'm helping with here. I'm not only translating for people, I'm guiding people through their dietas, and I'm seeing the result now. After all these people, I'm seeing how much help I am to these people. First-timers coming through the dieta, accomplishing, you know, levels of connection with the medicine, and length of accomplishment that took me forever to figure out on my own. So I see the value of me, right? I'm also a trainer. I'm not just a translator. I'd like to ask that you please, you know, address me for what I am instead of just a translator. And he had locked down right there. He had said, no, you're just a translator. That's what it says on your contract, and that's what I'm going to call you. And I was pushing back on that, saying, you know, but just the other day, you tell me put a shirt on, you're a master guide, I'm getting really confused here, you're sending mixed signals, right? And in this tug-of-war little conversation, you know, friendly, not aggressive in any way, but obviously we were both sort of digging our heels into the ground on this, I was very confused why he was digging his heels in. But he revealed, maybe it was an accident, but he said, finally, I can't call you that, a trainer, apprentice, or anything like that. I can't give you that title, because then you're stepping in to my territory. That's what he explains. And in the moment, I thought, oh, yeah, well, you know, much respect. I'm sorry, I get it. If this is about feeling like I'm encroaching, horning in on your territory, right? I get it, you know, I'm sorry. And he's like, yeah, so that's where it's at, right? It had sat there for months after that dieta. But when I went back to life, I thought that conversation over, it eventually hit me that this didn't make any sense, because for that whole year he'd been telling me, soon you're going to be running ceremonies too, I'm going to let you take the seat and I'll be assisting you through ceremony for people. We're going to sort of let you drive the bus. And his ultimate goal, he's told me before, was to have me as able to operate things as he is and eventually be able to fly on my own without him. And so as I started to think about this, you know, don't get in my territory, I realized how is this going to work? How will I be at your side assisting you in ceremony or even running ceremonies while you assist me? How will I enter that state without intruding on your territory as you know, the master of everything, of the ceremony, of the medicine? Really, the line he was putting down there was, you don't run this medicine, I run this medicine, you just translate. He was trying to sort of push me out of that circle. But that doesn't make sense, as I just described. If I'm going to be assisting you, if I'm going to be learning your medicine and be able to operate it on my own, obviously I'm going to be entering that circle, managing the medicine. And so I'd been thinking about this for months, and I hadn't been to the camp for the rest of that year, so I didn't have a chance to really sit down and have this kind of difficult, touchy conversation with him. But I've just come back from camp for a month and a half. I was there. Plenty of time to have this kind of conversation. And in the conversation, this point came up. This whole thing doesn't make sense. I'm getting really confused. How is this going to work if you refuse to even acknowledge my title? I don't understand how I'm going to stay out of your territory if we continue this apprenticeship. I'm at the line. I'm here, right? And I was sort of challenging him to see that this was something about his ego, his insecurity, that he has to work on. And I keep having to make clear, I'm not here to take your glory. I'm not here to steal your medicine and replace you and take your position, you know? I'm here to learn and help and assist. And if I'm an apprentice and I'm to grow with this medicine and I'm at this line where I need to start stepping into that stage, you have some work to do there of getting over whatever resistance it is that's making you stop me. Whatever insecurity it is, whatever power trip it is, you know, this is a problem for me now, and you have to see that. And it's such a touchy thing to sort of say without making it seem like I am trying to horn in, right? So I was just laying it out honestly. But he still wouldn't budge. He still... It became a really tense standoff. And really, ultimately, what it came down to, he pulled the personal power move, which I completely understand, and I knew would happen. His move was eventually, well, look, if you don't like things the way they are, you can always go over there and sit down and think about whether you want to go back to Canada and just walk away. You're not a prisoner here, right? So it was like, if you don't like it, get out. And like I said, that is a personal power move. As someone who understands dynamics of personal power, I suppose he felt maybe I was trying to manipulate him in that moment. And if I feel someone is manipulating me, that's also my ultimate trump card. Ultimately, if you're trying to move me and I don't want to move, you can always leave, right? I don't need you. That might not be true, but as a power move, that's a valid move. It is the state of personal power. Ultimately, as a personally powerful person, you're able to dump anybody. You're ready to dump anybody at any time if they're trying to cut you down, right? And I suppose that's what he felt, and that's how he reacted. But it's still, you know, I was there and I shook my head and I said, I cannot believe that rather than making this adjustment that is necessary, rather than doing this little thing that doesn't hurt you, that only improves our relationship here and the apprenticeship and will help us work better together and move us past this blockage that you've got in front of me right now, you would rather have me throw away this whole 3 years of sacrifice and effort, changing my life, coming here, dedicating everything to this. You would rather make me walk away than adjust even an inch on your side, right? But that's where it's at, and he wouldn't budge. And so I left the conversation with no solution, and actually more feeling worse than when we started it. So that was a real bummer. And we're about to have our final ceremony with the last clients for this wave. And I'm thinking, what now, right? I'm alone again in my room thinking about this, angry, thinking, as a powerful person myself, what I gotta do now is leave. Again, here we are at this goddamn disgusting moment of everything for nothing. Throw it all away, go back to Canada. So I spend maybe half an hour in that state, and I go back near his room to sort of try one last little conversation with him to try and get this to change, to get him to see that this is about him and his ego. And I go to his door and I hesitate, I turn around, I start walking back to my room, and I think, just forget it, he doesn't want to hear about this right now, we're about to go to ceremony, you know, don't push the issue. But then I turn around again, and I think, just whatever, go in there, say your piece. If this is all over anyway, right, might as well say your piece. So I go to his room, and I ask him if I could come in, and he welcomes me in. He's a lot lighter now, his energy's, you know, very welcoming. I come in, and I sit down, and I engage him again on this point. And now, all of a sudden, he's completely compliant. He's just understanding, and I start to explain again the issue, and he's like, yes, I understand, okay, we'll move this, we'll change this, and just like that, it's over, right? This gross little hump that we had hit is clear. He's cooperating on this now. So what I figured happened was, after I walked away, he got some time to think himself. You know, I guess I maybe surprised him with this when I spoke to him, but when I walked away and we had our moment alone, I guess he probably figured it out. Like, I guess, yeah, this is about me. I do need to change. He's never had an apprentice, as I mentioned. So it's normal that he will have to, you know, figure these things out for himself, in himself, right? Someone's horning in on my territory that's been all mine for all these years. And I suppose in that little time I was gone, he came to terms with it and realized, yeah, I guess I am kind of ruining this for him. I guess he can't continue if I stay like this. I gotta budge, right? So all of a sudden, everything is okay, and I thank him. Really, thank you, I appreciate this, you know? I'm sorry for this tension, but I had to talk about this because it was so blocked up, right? And now everything's open. Good, 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 thank you. We're good again. So, it's time to go get ready for ceremony. I get the client ready, we go to the ceremony space, we sit down, and we wait for Maestro to show up when he's ready. I'm just chatting with the client. He's definitely ready for his last ceremony. We're very comfortable and calm. And eventually, in walks Maestro. And as he crosses through the room between us, he says something to me in this sort of half-joking tone. He says, "So, you want the ceremony tonight? You want to run ceremony?" I sort of look at him as he sits at his mat, trying to figure out, is he really saying that? Is he really asking me if I really want to run the ceremony tonight? Or is he joking? And then he adds, yeah, maybe you want to sing, I don't know, the National Anthem of Canada. And then I laugh, I get it, haha, yeah, you're joking. Yeah, that's a joke, definitely. He doesn't say anything. And then he goes on into asking the client how he's doing, and are we all ready? Okay, let's begin the ceremony. Yeah, the joke he had made was, you take ceremony tonight, I'm just going to rest. So we take our dose, the client takes his dose. I decided to drink that night, now that the tension was, you know, clear. I come up to his mat, I watch him blow tobacco into the cup, nice full cup, hands it over. And even as he handed it over, I had a weird feeling that he'd put something in the cup when he blew that tobacco in. He had put some energy in there that was maybe going to be something different, right? So I swig it back, I thank him, I get back to my mat, we turn out the lights, waiting for the effects to kick in. And as I sat there on the mat in the darkness, something happens to me that hasn't happened in a long time, in a long, long time. And that was an instant urge to vomit the ayahuasca. I mean, within a minute of us getting silent, I feel it not settling. I feel it wanting to come up the throat. My mind is sort of thinking of vomiting. I'm thinking, oh man, what is this? This is like resistance or something. I haven't felt this in a long time. And I'm using every trick I have to tell the body to accept this. Calm down, stomach, let it in, don't purge. This is accepted, this is what we want. But it keeps wanting to just pump out. I feel my body wanting to involuntarily do it. And so I fight with this for a couple minutes, realizing the whole time there's a whisper in my mind saying, you know, that thing Maestro put in there, there's something you need to hold on to. And it's trying to get out. I don't know yet what it is. Don't let it out, or else it'll be wasted. So I'm fighting it, I'm fighting it. And eventually there is this just urge, this wave that came, this attempt to vomit. And I had fought it to the very last second, to the point where I hadn't even moved for my bucket. So if vomit had come out, it would have been all over me. That's how much I was determined, no, you're not coming out. But it surprised me. Up it came, up my throat, my stomach clenched. And I just barely held it in at the mouth. And I actually made a really sudden loud sound, just like a sort of a held sneeze, right? Just like a, you know? But I caught it, I stopped it in the throat, and down it went again. And after that, it stopped, it settled. So whatever it was, tried to come out, but I held it in. And then we just waited. I went into silent waiting. And the first vision I had, visions came pretty quickly. The first vision I had was of some shape like an eagle's wings arched upward, like an eagle presenting its open wings, right? And I was looking at that shape vaguely there, and I was thinking, ah, yeah, eagle, what does that mean? I see the wings. I sort of see a core of a body in light, some sort of light glowing in the heart of this thing. And as I'm watching it develop clearer, I get to a point where I realize, whoa, wait a second. That's not an eagle I'm looking at. Those are dragon wings. And there's the neck and there's the head. And it's looking right at me, presenting its wings. This is a dragon. And the dragon is Maestro's big power animal. It's sort of his big symbol. Wow, I'm looking at the dragon. And that glow I had seen in the chest area of this thing, I realize is like a kingdom of all these little buildings and towers and lights and roads and houses and shapes. It's like a whole kingdom. And this dragon has its wings wrapped around the whole thing, sort of protecting it. And there's his head lording on high over this. Wow, what a cool vision. And the ayahuasca's buzzing in my body. My body is physically buzzing at this point. And the medicine takes me in a journey through this landscape somewhere. I sort of dive into the lowlands of this kingdom that I've been looking at. And it's taking me real close up to all sorts of these psychedelic shapes, you know, flowers that are animating, sort of sucking like an octopus's tentacles would move while it swims, you know, all sorts of different things. And I'm just looking and casually floating through. Nothing is really meaning anything. I'm just sort of being shown mechanics and processes. And eventually, the vision dives downward, looking straight down at the floor of this glowing space I'm adventuring through. And way down at the bottom there, I see the same thing I saw a long time ago with psychedelics, which was a distant floor of light, of white energy, that's sort of in a matrix, a grid matrix. And from my position in space, I'm looking straight down a canyon in the shape of a cross, two intersecting lines. And I see the glowing white energy down there, and I recognize the cross, the God cross that I had seen in the episode about God. So there it is again. There you are down there, God energy. And the white cross moves to the front of me, now just presenting itself. Everything else disappears, and I just look at the white cross. It sort of shines at me and makes different patterns of itself. And then it fades. And I'm left with no effect. That was my whole journey that night. Right up front. And I'm still sitting there slumped like Maestro. is always through ceremony. Usually I lay down, but now I'm just slumped against the wall, just totally casual, watching all this happen. And when I come back to my senses, I realize that Maestro off to the side is softly snoring, which is not uncommon. He does fall asleep that way as he exits his body during a ceremony. So between his songs, he'll often softly snore like that. But he hasn't sung yet, and it's been a while. And he's snoring and snoring and snoring and snoring. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. Maybe an hour goes by. An hour and a half goes by. And as time goes on, and I've pretty much got no more effect in me except a nice soft buzz through the body and definitely connected to energy, I start to wonder about that comment he made when he came in. Do you want to take ceremony tonight? I'm just going to rest. You can even sing whatever you want, National Anthem of Canada. Ha ha ha. So as time draws on and on and on, and I know his ceremonies, he should have started singing by now, definitely two or three songs by now, and he's just sleeping and sleeping. I start to think, are you really expecting me to take this ceremony? I mean, we just had a big tug of war over territory, and how sensitive I saw you were about me encroaching. And now here it is, a situation he's engineered. The cleverness of Maestro, you know? I realize this is a test. And I have to juggle through all of that as we sit there and wait for the next half hour or so. I'm mulling it all over, what to do. He's not doing the ceremony on purpose. Is it because he wants me to take it and he's giving it to me? Or is he trying to see whether I will take it without serious permission from him? So it's like he planted a seed in me, the idea of taking the ceremony without directly giving me the right, and then went to sleep, waiting to see if I'd take it. So it was either an opportunity that he was giving me to practice, or it was a test to see how serious I was about not stepping in on his turf. Tricky, 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 right? So I sit there and mull this all over. What do I do? Do I start a ceremony? Do I wait? And after a while of really processing all this over and realizing what he gave me in that cup that I felt almost came out of me was the chair. He had given me the chair. My energy, my body, whatever, had tried to throw it out. Because it was a level of responsibility, a level of power that I had never been given like that. And I saw the dragon and the whole kingdom, which I guess represents all his medicine, right? King sitting on the throne, looking over the kingdom. And I came to realize in all that processing, I had a moment where I realized I'm sitting against this wall, slumped against this wall, just like Maestro does through every ceremony. He never lays down. He's always sitting like that. And I never had done that before because I get uncomfortable. I very quickly lay flat down or roll over. So I'm sort of giggling internally at myself, saying, look at you. You're just like Maestro right now. You're even sitting like him. You've got the chair. You know, you should be taking it. But I come to a moment where I make a decision. And I very clearly tell him in my mind, I say, I'm not going to take your territory unless you directly tell me to. All these little subtle things, the joking, the putting the chair into my cup, giving me the driver's seat, I'm not taking it unless you directly tell me I can. So I send him that decision firmly in my mind. And exactly as I do that, he starts to wake up. He sits up. Message received, I guess. He was watching me decide. Tricky Maestro. He was watching me all that time, waiting to see what I'd do. And when I sent him that decision, he sat up, started singing right away. little soft songs. He did a couple Icaros, but then he went right back to sleep, leaving me still there thinking, is this my ceremony? Is this yours? What's going on here? The client needs a ceremony, right? Is he okay over there? Just in all this silence and all this snoring. But I resolved to it. I'm not taking it. If you want to keep sleeping, you keep sleeping. I am not taking this ceremony for my own ego, for my own, hey, I got, here's a chance, you know, maestro's sleeping, let me take this. No, let's just be silent then. Let's just do this. So an hour more goes by, you know? Really boring ceremony. And so I get to a point where I start to feel, yeah, the medicine's starting to feel old in my stomach. I've had my visions way early on, and I start to want to purge. So I take my bottle of water and I silently blow a little medicine song that I blow into that water when I want it to help me purge, clean me up, in a very quiet way so that no one else hears it. I'm still not taking this ceremony. And when I finish that song, I drink a good half of that bottle. And I get back to waiting. Soon I start to feel like, ugh, plastic, gross, something gross in my mouth, on my tongue, in that water. And my tongue is now tingling. Like when you rinse your mouth with some peroxide, there's this like tingly, chemical, stingy kind of linger. And that's on my tongue now, and it's in my palate, it's in my gums. Ugh. Is there a bleach in this water? I start to think. Sometimes when we bring in the tanks of treated water, it's actually well water. And to make sure that it's really clean, sometimes they'll put a couple drops of, you know, bleach in there, which is not unsafe, but enough to kill the bacteria that might be there, right? Just to be sure people don't get sick. So I start to wonder, yeah, did they do that to this water? Because right now it's really, oof, making this ceremony a little bit gross for me. As I'm sitting there thinking this, I start to feel internally really gross. I start to feel like feelings of poison and venom. I start to see now vision of spider energy, which had come to me in my last dieta. This is another thing that started happening for me in my medicine path here. Ideas of venom, of spider, of traitor, of someone out there sending me bad energy. And this is bound to happen on my path. As I grow, there are all kinds of shady, dark medicine people out there that like to try and cut down someone like me as they watch me grow from a distance. So that's been on my radar. And in this moment, it's coming up again. Ugh, gross something in my water and feeling gross inside and thoughts of venom and visions of spider. There's like a traitor in the air. There's a bad energy starting to build. And just then, the dogs in the village start to go crazy. And they always do this when I get to one of these moments. And it's not a hallucination, it legitimately happens, but it just so happens that it only happens when I'm having a moment like that. And for me, they confirm to me, right? They make it a little realer when I feel this. I feel, yeah, this isn't just me, right? Even the dogs in the village are starting to go haywire, all of them, right? You'll often hear a dog bark at night when, you know, an animal might go by their home. They'll bark for a little bit and stop. But rarely will you hear every dog start to howl and bark and just really sound the alarm. And that's what they're doing. As I'm feeling this venom and this spider and oof. And then I start to feel cold, just chills and ooh, what is wrong here? And there's a gravity starting to come down on the ceremony space. I feel it's not just me, it's like this whole room. There's a dark shadow weighing down from above. And I feel it in my blood, and I'm cold, and I'm nauseous. What the hell is this, right? But I've gone through all kinds of dark energies and bad moments with ayahuasca, and I've learned, just breathe through it. Just watch it. It'll pass, right? And that's what I'm doing. I don't participate. I don't sing any protective songs I would have sung for myself in this moment if I was alone. I just watch it, and I wait. Breathe, buddy, you know, keep it together. Don't worry about this, it'll pass. And as it's getting heavier and landing more and more on the floor of our space, things are getting colder, darker. I start to feel something I never felt before, ever, in all of the trials and tribulations and intensities I've had with ayahuasca. I never felt this before. I start to feel that very peculiar, recognizable feeling you get in your head, that dizziness, when you feel like you might pass out, like the blood is rushing out of your head, right? And the sound starts to get very distant, and it's like you're gonna black out. And I'm feeling this now, with my back up against the wall, and I think, ooh boy, any second now I might just drop. And now I start to get a little concerned. I'm thinking, you know, someone has to do something about this. So I call to Maestro in the darkness, break the silence of our ceremony that's been going for hours at this point. Maestro. No answer. He's not even snoring now. I sort of breathe for a second. Try again. Louder. Maestro. Nothing. And it's getting heavier. I wait maybe 2-3 minutes more. It's not passing. It's getting worse. So now I say it even louder. Maestro! Nothing. So I finally think, fine. If you're not gonna take care of this, I'll do it. So I reach for my harmonica, take it up to my mouth, and I start to sing my protection song weakly, and I can hear it in my harmonica. I'm not quite kicking its ass, you know? It's some notes are going wrong. My breath is kind of shaky, but I'm doing my best. I'm pushing it away. Get out of here. I'm sort of raising the tent back up. It's like a tent had collapsed on top of us. And with this song, I was raising a pole back up, pushing the light out, moving darkness away. And I finish my medicine song. Still dizzy, but I feel better. I feel like a lot of it has passed now. And as soon as I finish, Maestro calls me over. Hey, hey, bring me your harmonica. So I bring it over in the darkness. I wander over carefully. I give it to him. He says, thank you. I wander back to my mat and I just sort of flop down on it. Clump, you know, oof. All of a sudden I'm exhausted. Whatever I just did really drained me. I don't know if I won over this thing or not, but Maestro, I guess, decided to finish the job. He gets to playing on my harmonica. And I'm just now kind of spinning, laying on my side on my bed, feeling like I just put down a heavy weight, you know? And I'm just in myself, thinking about what just happened, barely hearing his song, but he plays for a good while. And when he's finished, he calls me again, come get your harmonica. So I get up and I slump over there and I take my harmonica and I get back to my mat and I sit down and lay down, exhausted. But I can tell now that energy is gone. Whatever that darkness was, now it's gone. We're good. Resting. So after a little while, Maestro calls to me and he says, should we wrap the ceremony up? But as he's talking to me, I get the urge. Ooh, purge time. Okay, get to the bucket. Slowly getting over my bucket. You know, out comes one wave. And this was one of the most effortless purges I've ever had. It was like I just opened up my throat and a waterfall shot out. No effort, just a nice, clean, liquid purge. Comes out into the bucket. And after the first wave, I breathe. Oh, wow. And I say, Maestro. He says, yeah. And I say, was there bleach in that water? He says, bleach? I say, yeah, bleach. Yeah, more comes out. He starts laughing. He says, I don't think so. And I say, well, I tasted bleach. It was tingling, you know, we're just casually talking now. He says, yeah, well, I don't know how they treated it this time. Okay, yeah, I don't know. It was burning. You know, out comes more. And he's loving the sound of my purge for some reason. 3, 4, 5 waves of that later, it's done. You know, and I think, wow, that was a good one. And I told him, you know, there was that dark energy that came through. Oh, yeah? Yeah, I was heavy and I got dizzy and I saw a spider, poison. He says, how are you feeling now? I say, well, I guess it's gone. He says, you purged it out. I'm like, I guess, I don't know. And then he asks me, well, should we finish this? Should we go back to bed? He's asking me, again confirming this was my ceremony, right? And I say, one last song, maestro. And so I play a beautiful, clean, pure harmonica song to wrap it up. I can tell now my energy's a lot better. That darkness, that heaviness has passed. And when I finish, I say, now we can go to bed. And he says, okay. We get up and we start heading out back to bed. I have my bucket with me to throw the purge away under a plant we have growing outside the door there. A Toei plant, a very powerful medicine plant, and that's where we dump our purges. So I had my bucket with me. He walks on to his room. I dump my purge under the Toei plant, and I turn my bucket upside down to leave it on the ground right there. And as I look down and do that, right there next to my bucket, in the light of my headlamp, I see the tail of a red snake escaping into the grass under the tree. And I hear it in the grass, a little movement, right? And I think, whoa, that could be a problem. I don't know what that is, but I should let Maestro know. So I go get Maestro. Maestro, I just saw the tail of a red snake under the Toei plant. I don't know if it's a problem. Just want to let you know in case we got to kill it, right? Oh yeah, okay, let's go see. So we have a little while looking around the Toei plant. We're not finding it. You know, I'm showing him it was there and it went that way. It must be around somewhere. I don't think it's gone. And he's asking me, you know, you sure it was real? Could this be a hallucination? And I tell him, no, this was real. This was definitely real. There was a snake. And so he's looking and looking, doubting me. And then he finds it. And it was a little tiny red garden snake kind of snake, really skinny and small. And it was all curled up right next to one of the flowers on the Toei plant, up on a branch, looking really, you know, scared. And so we look at it for a while and he tells me, yeah, that one's okay. That's not a problem. So nice little ayahuasca moment, symbology there. And I head back to the Maloka to check on the client, David. Pop my head in, David, how you doing? And he tells me, I still need a while, man. I think, can you sit with me? It's kind of just starting for me. So I think, sure, man. I come back in and I sit with them. Of course I'll sit with you, my friends. Let's sit here in silence. And that turned into, just like Karim's dieta, that turned into an extra ceremony for him. After Maestro leaves the picture, I got to run a ceremony for someone else in the room. I sat there with him in silence, and once in a while I'd get an inkling, this song is needed right now. Pick up your harmonica, play that song, and I would listen and I would do. And he had an amazing experience. So for him, he had been waiting. David had been waiting that whole time. Maestro was snoring, me not doing anything. David had been waiting that whole time for an effect. And it didn't start until I first played my harmonica. Nothing was really happening until I started doing. So he was just beginning. And I sat there and I ran a whole ceremony for him. And it was beautiful. And some really important moments happened for him there that beautifully closed his 2 weeks of hard work. And there's a whole bunch of other stories I can share about the details of that. But for now, this was the story for today. Just an example, just an update of where things are sitting for me in my apprentice's path. It's a lot right now about the relationship, the negotiation of space, of sharing between me and Maestro. So it was a great exercise for both of us, for him probably starting to doubt whether he was being too egotistical. He gave me the ceremony to prove to himself maybe that he's not that attached to it. And at the same time, probably waiting to see how quickly I would jump in and be like, yeah, this is mine now, yeah? And he saw, I proved, that's not what I'm about. So it was great. and things ended really fine, and things are sitting in a really good place. Just a couple of extra little points here, fellow human, before I wrap this up. First of all, I did delay releasing this episode for quite a couple of weeks there as I re-listened to this and took little details out, and just I've been very careful with this episode to be sure that I don't insult or smear Maestro. As I said, I absolutely respect him in medicine work and everything, but on the individual level, this is what happens when you know each other for 3 years and negotiate space and you're kind of like living together in a certain sense, right? Little gripes and issues come up. There are some things I left out, some details about the tug of war I was having there with Maestro. There's all these other elements that were at work there that I didn't bother including in the explanation so that it would stay simple. But I realized on listening to it, just as it is, that it sounds like the whole tension and tug of war was only about what he was calling me, right? Don't just call me a translator, call me your apprentice, call me this or that, that. It wasn't just about that. That kind of makes it seem trivial for this whole thing to blow up over, right? It was about more than that. A lot of things that were related to that same kind of dynamic of me feeling disrespected, me feeling unappreciated, not getting my due in all sorts of different ways, right? So I just want to make that clear in case anyone listening to this were thinking, why is it such a big deal what he's calling you? Just ignore it, right? No, it wasn't just that. It was the whole dynamic behind that was causing problems everywhere for me. But now it's all cleared, as I said. So it was good. It was good to talk about it and get through it. And I'm glad we worked it out in the end. But I wanted to make sure and share this reality of, you know, shamans are humans, and they're not these perfect angels that have worked on every aspect of themselves and are ready to incarnate into the next level. You know, they're just very human people, and they've got very different personalities. And when it comes to Maestro, he's a person who has lived alone a lot in his life. He's got a family and kids and everything, but he spends most of his life at the Dieta camp, basically in isolation himself. And that's by choice to a large degree. I do see him as a man who likes being alone. I can understand that on many levels. People are frustrating, and life is simpler when you're by yourself, especially when you're working on all these spiritual high things, and you've got all these priorities in your mind and preoccupations that seem to be cosmic in scale, right? You don't want to deal with someone's little human drama, you know, who's tangling you up into this mess of basic human life, right? So, as a person who has chosen to live that way, it is a challenge for him to have this random person from the West come in and always be at the camp and starting to make his unlimited space feel a little more cramped, right? So it's normal. So to me, I don't see any of what I've said today as a kind of a smear. I mean, all it's doing is knocking him down a peg for anyone who might want to see him as the perfect, glorious, half-angel on earth kind of creature that people think shamans are, right? I'm very happy to deflate that. I don't think it's necessary. I think it only helps build ego for a person like that. And I don't think it's helpful for the person who feels that way about them, right? I felt like this about Maestro at first, and I had to downgrade that as the reality of the reality came through. He's just a human, and there's issues here, and really weird little ego tugs of war happening, which I thought he would be beyond, right? But that was my bag. That was me thinking he should be beyond that. Anyway, a couple of other interesting lingering threads for that last piece of the story there that I'd like to just mention. That moment with the darkness, when that darkness came over us, first of all, it was over us. I confirmed later with David, who was sitting across from me in that room, I confirmed that at the same time that I was feeling this darkness, this grossness, this heaviness come into the space, he was working himself in his own mind. Remember, this was a silent ceremony to that point. He was being confronted with a very serious, basically mortal fear, a challenge that had come through his life recently that he was still very freshly trying to digest, right? So this dark, traitor, murderous kind of thing had come through him at the same time as I was feeling the venom, I was feeling the darkness, I was feeling, you know, so there definitely was this general badness that came through the ceremony at that point, which is normal. Happens all the time, right? But when you've got an experienced shaman sitting at the helm, you never even get to really feel that, because they'll sing a song, you know, they'll take action to sort of shoo it away if it's not necessary before anyone else even detects it. But what was happening there, the interesting thing, is that Maestro, I'm sure, was aware of it. If I'm aware of it, if David's aware of it, Maestro is obviously aware of it. And as I described in that part of the story, when I called to him, he was completely stonewalling me, which is not a moment of inattention. He knew. He was purposely not reacting because he wanted me to take charge and take care of that situation, right? I mean, just the fact that he wasn't snoring tells me that he wasn't sleeping. He was awake and conscious, right? And paying attention, but refusing to assist me. Because I was calling to him to say, hey, don't you feel that? Hey, shouldn't we do something about this, right? You want me to do something, you know? Are you going to do something? But completely refusing any interaction with me forced me to... He basically told me, no, this is you, right? You take care of this. Which I did, and everything turned out fine, right? And now another interesting little detail is that when I drank from my water bottle later that night, I was very careful to see, is it still tingling? Is there still that chemical kind of poison thing in there, that bleachy kind of taste? Absolutely not. It was gone. It only happens during that part of the ceremony when I drank, which again points me to the possibility that it was some kind of sabotage, right? Some kind of energy. Someone snuck in and put some bad juju into that water, you know? But then the interesting question comes up for me. Was that some shadowy enemy, maybe of Maestro's, who's been trying to sabotage me in the distance, right? Was that one of those figures sort of sending me an attack from afar? Or there is the very possible possibility that it was Maestro himself, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for me to take the ceremony, trying all these different things, you know, singing a little bit and then clamming up again and going to sleep, right? Giving me all these little hints to take it, me not taking it. So I don't see it as impossible that as he sat there watching me and waiting, maybe he's the one who sent this bad energy as like a test, right? You know, the people like Maestro, they don't mess around. He'd have no problem, you know, shooting at my feet with a gun, you know, to get me to jump. You know, he would know that he's not going to hurt me, but he'd do some crazy thing like that, right? So it doesn't seem impossible to me that it was maybe him simulating an attack, you know, simulating a dark moment just to force me to finally do something, right? As evidenced even more by the fact that he refused to participate or help when I called to him. So anyway, just a couple of interesting twists to put on that there. And final little point I'll put in here, as I spoke with David later that night, way later that night after his extra ceremony with myself, as we got into the afterglow and we're just chatting about life and things, I told him about roughly what had just happened, right? The tug of war I had had with Maestro just before ceremony, and the weird subtle way that he had given me the ceremony, but I wasn't sure if I should take it, right? Now, David is Mexican, and he definitely understands the Latino culture and way of being more than I ever could. And, you know, there was a thing that he had said during his two-week dieta one day. He told me, hey, you know, I've been watching the way Maestro deals with you when you guys are together around me, and I think it's really sweet. He treats you like family. And since I was kind of upset at Maestro during that week for other things, you know, I thought, yeah, maybe you can say that, but I actually think he treats me like crap sometimes. And he told me, no, man, that's how it is. That's the Latino way, right? He's treating you like family, not like a guest. And I thought, wow, you know, that's an interesting perspective. I mean, I never had an English-speaking Latin person tell me that as he did, so I appreciated that. But after I told him, you know, how things had gone down during that very ceremony, I told him, yeah, when he came in and he said that comment about, you know, you want the ceremony, ha ha ha, David corrected me. He said, no, no, he wasn't joking. He was serious, you know, and as a Latin culture person, somehow he knew, David knew, that Maestro was completely serious and he was telling me to take the ceremony in this indirect kind of macho way. I don't know. There's a lot of cultural divide on the way we operate that's causing some issues there between me and Maestro. But yeah, I'm learning. He's learning. David taught me a lot with those comments. But the interesting thing is, as I was describing how I was basically sitting with the ceremony in my hands that whole time, David said, "Ah, so he gave you the throne." And that was just such an appropriate word for him to take. I had called it a chair in my mind. I hadn't mentioned anything about a chair or he gave me the seat. You know, I hadn't said anything to do with any chair. But David himself identified, "Ah, he gave you the throne." And when he said throne, I thought about the kingdom and the dragon and all that, and I realized that's what it was. It was a throne. He gave me the throne, the big chair, you know? So just these funny little ways that understanding is shared between people drinking ayahuasca together. Yeah. So there it is, just a couple extra points I wanted to throw in there. And I'll leave it there for now, fellow humans. That's sort of a little overview of how things sit, and also a little piece of realism about what it's like to be negotiating human relationship with someone like a shaman when you go and apprentice with them. You know, they're not infallible. They are still working on things. We all are. So, fellow human, that'll be it for this one. As always, you can find this podcast over at higherideas.net. And of course, at the very top of higherideas.net, there's a little orange Patreon link, which will take you to the support fund for this project, for this whole adventure. I do hope some of you will consider donating and helping to keep this thing going, this adventure I'm sharing with you guys here, wherever I can. And of course, thank you to all of the Patreon patrons who have supported so far. Thank you, guys. None of this story would be happening without your support. So thank you. And that does it for today. So until next time, fellow human, keep thinking.